not that cute, but hopefully I can hold your attention like this little girl probably held your attention. I've seen that video now several times, and each time I look at it, I have to laugh and smile. And I love the song. The girl is adorable, of course. But the question I have that I want us to think about is, does it give us a good understanding of Jesus' love? Well, I don't think so. I mean, after all, it is a simple children's song. It's easy to see how Jesus could love a cute little girl like this, right? But is that really the extent of Jesus' love? Is that how we see it? Well, this question has bothered me, especially if I looked at the events leading up to Jesus' death. Because in studying what happened that last week before Jesus died on the cross, I was struck with how little understanding that I have of the extent of Jesus' love. To take Palm Sunday, for example, that is what this Sunday is. And the more I studied Palm Sunday, the more troubled I became. I mean, here's the scene. Jesus, as was prophesied by Zechariah, comes riding into Jerusalem on a donkey. And the crowds go wild. They're shouting, they're taking off their coats, they're laying them down in front of him. They're breaking branches off of trees and waving them in the air, and they're also laying branches down in front of him. And I look at that and I say, yes, that's the kind of glory that Jesus should have. That's the kind of respect that he should have. That's the kind of honor that he should have. They're saying, Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel. But then as I kept reading, I wondered, where did those people go? I don't find them in the next verses and chapters. Where are they? Over the next 5 days, we don't see them much. And especially on that Friday, none of them are to be found. Everything falls apart. Instead of being praised, Jesus is being cursed. Instead of palm branches, a crown of thorns. Instead of honor, he is treated worse than a common criminal. How does that happen? And I had to ask the question, and it stuck with me for a long time, and I couldn't get past it. Why did Jesus put up with that? Why did he do this? Why did he even come into Jerusalem? Why did he bother to save a people who were clueless, who were obstinate, who were cruel and foolish? It doesn't make sense. And earlier, before Palm Sunday, I was reading in Mark. It says there that they were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Those who were with him also were wondering, why? Why are you going to Jerusalem? He was just there before, a few weeks in Bethany, and he was almost killed during that time. There was a plot to kill him. Why go back to Jerusalem? And for me, maybe for you as well, we ask these questions, what God has called us to do, and we say, why do we do that? Why do we want to go down that path? Wouldn't it be easier to go away from Jerusalem and find a place where people like you, people that you can hang out with, that aren't out to kill you? Why go to Jerusalem? Jesus loves me, this I know. Such a simple song. But I wonder about that second phrase, this I know. Do I really understand Jesus' love for me that week? Do I understand what he experienced that week? And on this day coming in, And in some ways basking in the glory of these people, and this is how it should be. But he knew. He knew that everything was going to change during the next few days. And how could he come in knowing that things were going to change significantly? But this is the arena that Jesus comes into. He knows who they are, yet he comes anyway. I look at the crowd and I say, my, what a fickle crowd. This crowd is made up of people there because, some of them at least are there, because Jesus is the in thing. He's big right now. People are hearing about him, the miracles that he's done. Some of them have heard about Lazarus being raised from the dead. And they're curious, they're excited. Who is this? Who is this great prophet who can do such great miracles? The news of that spreads like wildfire. Is he there? Is he the one that will save them? And I think they were confused too about what they wanted to be saved from. They wanted to be saved from the Romans. Is he there? Is he here to save us from the Romans? Is he the Messiah? They had some confusion too about how the Messiah would come and what the Messiah would do for them. Is he the one? Well, these kind of people bounce from popular thing to popular thing. And we see that very quickly they fade away. It reminds me of a flock of birds. Have you ever seen a huge flock of birds that are flying? And you see, it's almost like, it looks kind of like artwork. You see, all of a sudden, this big flock goes this way, and they're all together. And then they go this way, and it's just all over. They're flying around the sky, and it's an amazing thing to watch. But it kind of reminds me of people. It kind of reminds me of me sometimes. How we like to just kind of take the popular route. We want to follow what's exciting, what's in at the time. And when it fades, we quickly switch to something else that's more exciting and is in at that time. That's what it reminds me of. It reminds me, too, of these palm branches that we have. And I'd like you to take those home with you this week, kind of as a reminder. And I want you to set it somewhere where you'll see it each day. And I want you to watch what happens to the palm branch. I mean, today they look nice and green. But as they lay out for a while, you'll watch them shrivel and die. You'll watch them become not green anymore, but brown and shriveled up. And it reminds me somewhat of the fickleness of some of the people in the crowd, of how excited they are one day about Jesus, the next day or the next few days, they turn against him. But yet Jesus comes into that. He knows they don't understand who he is. He knows they are fickle. And he loves them anyway. Isn't that an amazing thing? He loves them anyways. And as he approaches Jerusalem, do you remember what he says? As he comes up, it seems like over a rise, and he sees the city. What does Jesus say? What does he do? He weeps for them, these people. He knows what's going to happen, but he weeps for them. And he says, if you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. He loves the people. He has compassion on them, even when they don't understand and carelessly throw him aside. It's a challenge to me. And maybe that's why I got stuck on this passage. And wondering, why did Jesus do that? Because that's not a natural thing for me to do. We all like to be popular. We all like it when people praise us and say how great we're doing. But we don't like it when people fade away. When suddenly we're not popular anymore. We don't seek those kinds of things out. In fact, we don't even like to go in places where maybe people, we know that will happen, that people will praise us one day and the next day they'll curse us or we'll be dirt. We don't put ourselves in those situations. I would have a hard time being compassionate for people like that. We get tired of it. We've had people who want things from us, seem to take advantage of us. We get tired of it. We try to help them, but they don't seem to understand sometimes what help they need, and they wander away from it time and time again. And so often we want to say, well, fine, you know, if that's what you want to do, then, you know, you go your road and I'll go mine. I don't need this. Let me work with people who like me. But that's not what Jesus did. Jesus came in, he knew what the people were about, he knew they didn't understand, and he loved them anyway. He comes in with compassion. He knew that they didn't understand that he was the one that could bring them peace. They didn't know that. They didn't understand. And they didn't understand what kind of peace he brought. Well, if we look at the disciples in that group, you'd probably say, well, that is an easier group to love. These are the ones that stuck with Jesus. These are the ones who gave up everything for him. They turned away from their occupations, from their families, and they followed Jesus. They're his friends, his close confidants. They are the people that we depend on in difficult times. They are the ones that we expect to be there. They're the ones that we expect to encourage us, to defend us, to carry us on through. Jesus' closest friends. But yet again, on Friday, they're nowhere to be found. In fact, we find that one of them isn't even a follower, Judas. He's a traitor, an enemy. I'm not sure exactly what Judas was doing there. Maybe he thought that Jesus was going to start a revolt. I don't know what he was thinking. But it's clear that he was in it for the wrong reasons. He was stealing money from the money jar, and when it came evident that Jesus wasn't going to do what he wanted him to do, he sold him out for 30 pieces of silver. Well, the others had their own issues as well. If you look at the group of disciples, they were by no means a perfect group of people. We find James and John angling for special treatment. They come to Jesus asking for special places of honor, one to sit on his left and one to sit on his right when he comes into his kingdom. And I don't know what they were thinking either about what Jesus' kingdom was going to look like. But I don't think they had a good grasp of it. Well, the rest of the disciples find out about this and they're angry. And they start fighting and squabbling about who is the greatest. You have to wonder, how did Jesus look at that? And at times we see him when he works with his disciples and we see that there's some frustration there working with these men who should get it, but often don't get it either. They're clueless in many ways. Luke records that on the evening before Jesus was crucified at the Passover meal, and I think this is a different argument, but once again the disciples get into an argument about who is going to be the greatest. Surely he had to look at these disciples and think of them as children sometimes, dealing with children. And yet he comes that very evening, Jesus, the Son of God, and what does he do? He wraps a towel around his waist. He takes a basin of water. And then he gently lifts the dirty, dusty, sweaty feet of each of the disciples, and he washes them with water, and he dries them. The Son of God, to these men who often didn't get it, these friends who didn't show up on his worst day. Isn't it amazing? The love that Jesus has, I don't get it. It's beyond what I can understand at times. It's an amazing thing, this love. And later that evening, as they're in the garden, Jesus is overcome with great anguish and sorrow as he's contemplating the pain and suffering and the death that awaits him just hours away. He asks the disciples to watch and to pray with him. And he prays in agony of mind as he cries out to the Father to remove this cup from him. And he returns to his disciples and he finds what? They're sleeping. Can you believe that? They're sleeping. The time when Jesus is in some of his most agonizing moments, the disciples are sleeping. He returns three times and they're sleeping. Each time they have fallen asleep. How can it be? But you probably experienced that at times in your life where something very important has happened in your life. Something in history maybe that is very important. I remember back in 9/11 when that occurred. I remember, does everybody remember where you were on 9/11? You remember exactly where you were? They say that. Yeah, most of us could say we know exactly where we were. It was such a traumatic event. I remember being at work and going in and watching the TV as everybody from work crowded around, could not believe what was happening. And then I remember coming home in the evening and watching the news in the evening, and I remember being a little perturbed. My children were quite a bit younger at that time, and they were playing and having a great time. And I thought, "What? Don't you understand? Don't you understand what is happening here? This event, this terrible event that is happening. How can you play?" But they're children. They didn't know what was going on. They didn't understand. And I wonder if maybe in some ways Jesus didn't feel that way with the disciples. They didn't understand how important this was. They didn't know the events that were taking place right in front of them, how important they were, how difficult they were for Jesus. He didn't know. I remember at the funeral of my mother, I remember being in the procession as we drove out to the funeral, and I looked as cars and houses and businesses, and it suddenly struck me, you know, the last few days my life had been on hold. Everything that I had been doing was suddenly shoved aside and it didn't matter anymore. But I looked around and everybody else was going on as if nothing had happened. They were playing and kids were out playing. School was happening, people were at their jobs, people were eating out, as if nothing had happened. And my mother had passed away. I had to wonder if Jesus felt some of this with the disciples in the garden. And then we come to Peter. We all remember Peter, his strong boldness, and his declaration to Jesus, "I'll never leave you. I'll never disown you, even if I have to die." Peter was so strong. And I think he was so convinced in his strength that he could do whatever it took. But what happened? Within hours, Peter had denied him three times. And on the third time, Jesus, in the midst of his own trial, it caught me in a new way. In the midst of his own trial, he thinks of Peter. And that third time, he catches Peter's eye. What do you think he communicated to Peter with that look? What do you think it was? I don't really know what it was. But I could venture a good guess based on Jesus' character. Was it a stern, condemning look? I don't think so. See, you failed me. I don't think it was that kind of a look. Was it an I told you so look? You didn't listen to me, did you, Peter? I told you this was going to happen. Us parents know what that kind of look is. You've used it quite a few times. But no, I don't think it was that kind of a look. I think it was a look of love. I think he looked at Peter and he loved him. There was some sadness there, definitely. But it was a look of love, I believe. Peter, I still love you. How did Jesus do it in the midst of his own suffering? Jesus loves me. This I know. And I'm wondering, do you and I know, or is it still just a simple children's song to you? Is that what Jesus' love is? And as we approach Easter, do you understand the full extent of his love? Do you understand the significance of the events that we're celebrating, that we're remembering as we come into Easter week? And he knows that we're going to forget. He knows that we're going to make light of it at times. He knows that we're going to fail. But yet, he loves us anyways. Do you understand that he loves you even when you're not cute and lovable? But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us.